This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Hi, Mike. So
Hi,
great
Barbara.
To be here with you. I'm Barbara Lopez-Kunz, and I'm the Global Chief Executive of DIA. And I have the pleasure to be here with Mike Rosenblatt, who is the Chief Medical Officer for Flagship Pioneering. And Mike led a really important and interesting session this morning about value-based contracting, looking at the way to perhaps make it a best practice. And so, Mike, could you start off and tell us a little bit about who joined you in that session?
We had a stellar panel, Barbara. I was joined by Ellen Zane, who's the former CEO of Tufts Medical Center and the Floating Hospital for Children right here in Boston, and she continues as vice chair. And then we had Sam Nussbaum, who's in the past has been the chief medical officer for Anthem WellPoint. We had Indranil Bagchi, who is in charge of patient access for Novartis's oncology division, and Luca Pani, who's a professor of psychiatry now at the University of Miami, but had been the head of the Italian regulatory agency.
Yes, a really impressive panel, and such fabulous perspectives were shared on stage, and I'm really looking forward to sharing it with DIA membership. So to start off, Mike, could you share a little bit about why are we talking about value-based contracting? Why is this on our agenda at all?
Well, the reason we're talking about value-based contracting and pricing is that it's extremely important for the future. We have basically two forces that are at play, and there's a natural tension to them. One is the desire of people, who all of us become patients, to have the newest, most effective, most safe therapies available to us. And those don't just kind of fall out of the sky.
We wish.
We wish. They are invented, so they cost something. And then, of course, we have all the burdens of healthcare, not just drugs, but everything else. And that's been increasing tremendously. And so there's a tension between these. But, I believe in research, and I believe it's essential that we have these innovations. And an example I'll give you is I don't think one of the biggest problems we're facing, for instance, Alzheimer's disease, that's not going to get better by having a better functioning healthcare system. We're going to need a pill or a treatment or something that is going to change the trajectory of that disease. And when that happens, I don't know how it'll be priced, but society is going to clamor for it. So our current system, the price of something in many ways is disconnected from its real value.
Yes.
We've got a lot of discrepancies. So I think what is fairest and what will be functional for society and for the industry is to move to something value-based.
And moving back to this idea of invention and discovery, I love the example that you gave comparing the pathway that a drug would take to get to market and what happens after its launch versus something like an iPhone. And could you share that? Because I thought that really opened up my mind in a way.
Well, what Barbara's alluding to is during my session, I held up one of these and I said, probably everybody in the audience has one of these and they're great inventions. I love mine. I have a friend who says this should win the Nobel Prize. But these are the product of engineering. And I don't mean that, and I mean that in the best sense. If you put a team of engineers on this project, or a moonshot for that matter, if you have a good enough team, a large enough team, you give them the right resources, with very high probability you can create one of these. And guess what? You can create one of these every 2.5 years.
Right.
Not so much with a drug. It's human biology. and it's unpredictable. And when we go and put something in the body to correct some mechanism, everything is interlocking. And so you get a whole set of unintended consequences, some of which you can live with and maybe some of which you can't. So we just accumulate tons of failed projects. And so at the end of the day, it cost, for the first one of these, $150 million to create it, and it cost $2 billion to make a drug.
Absolutely. And in the drug world, you discuss this point that as interesting new biology is discovered, what we once knew is no longer relevant.
Right.
So things drop off, drop out of the market as well, and their value right. ceases to exist.
Yeah.
But that was a really important point. So Alan Zane also made some really important comments about the economics around healthcare, the healthcare system. So could you tell a little bit about that?
Well, Ellen was great, and she's so thoughtful. She has such a great perspective on this. And she said in, I think, fairly direct terms that we do need to move to value, and she defined value for us. She said value is something that improves quality and actually decreases cost. And she took a broad view of cost, which is all in. So the drug might be expensive, but if it saves money down the line in multiple places, that's worth it. And so she described the fact that we have to get to such a system that recognizes what the value is. And she also, I thought, gave a pretty poignant description of where American healthcare is, in part kind of paying for performance, fee-for-service, and fee-for-service. And these are two very different ways of operating. She showed a picture of basically someone with one foot in two different canoes.
Yes.
And you knew that that wasn't going to come out well.
Yes. And I also loved how she talked about the sort of total cost of care. And
yes.
She used an acronym that maybe I'm not remembering exactly right.
Total medical expense,
total
TME.
Medical expense. And so, you know, we have a way of thinking in our world about, you know, one component of it. Look at the price of a drug
right.
and look at the vector over time of that. When the reality is you need to look at the total cost of the
yeah.
treatment regimen, which
Absolutely.
I thought was interesting.
And of course, one of the things we struggle with, especially in the United States, is since insurance companies don't have a member for more than about 3 years
yes.
on average, so how do we pay for these cures?
Yes.
Or how do we pay for something that is giving you a benefit over many years? Because somebody pays for it now, but the benefit comes to a different insurance
yes.
plan later.
I thought that was really another point that I hadn't thought about before,
yeah.
so I appreciated that. Another thing she talked about, which I really enjoyed hearing, was the idea of how we have historically thought of healthcare with the hospital in the middle of the system, and with our ever-increasing view around the patient and the desire and need and essential nature of the patient being part of the conversation, the evolving view of the patient at the center. So could you comment a little bit more about that transformative thinking?
Well, it's very clear that systems were built with the hospital at the center, and in the center of the hospital was the doctor, and everything was constructed around it. That's when your appointments were not very user-friendly for patients. Now these systems are all being rated on, you know, what it's like to receive care in those situations. So some are voluntarily and some are being forced to make changes in this regard. But I sort of took off on part of that in saying still at the end of the day, most of what we think about are how do we serve populations? And we gauge what we're doing for the average patient. That's what a regulator is worried about. Will it work in the average patient? And can I unleash this on the average person in society? And pharma creates its drugs for average people. Insurers pay for it. But there's no such thing as the average patient.
Yes, and Sam, of course, yeah. got into that and thinking about it from the perspective of of a payer,
right,
and from his experience at Anthem. So could you share a little bit about his perspective around how that dynamic happens through that part of the system?
Well, he began by saying we don't even think about cost at the beginning. We look at what's the clinical value, and we take biopsies. What do doctors think of the value? And what do patients think of the value? Does it address their need or not? And then when there's sort of a green light from that, then they start digging in and trying to do the metrics around it. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. And then, of course, we had the view from industry in terms of the assessment that's being done before a product gets to market from Indranil Bakshi. And I found his views really interesting because there's a lot of detailed assessments and economic evaluations that go on. So can you share a little bit about his view?
Well, I think, I'll go back a step on his view, which is he was telling us about something that, a year ago didn't exist,
right,
which was a drug that's actually a living cell that's put in your body and it replicates and it expands and it's there forever. We've never had things like that. And in children, these are cures to the people who respond. So this is the kind of thing, when I went to medical school, honestly, I would have said, that's a miracle. And now we have it. It's a reality. It's expensive. That is tailor-made for every single patient, but you get a lifetime of benefit of it. So he was discussing, how do we pay for something that's so terrific? There were a few models that I thought were creative and intriguing. They've got great confidence that this works in many people, but not everyone. And so they're in a position to say, you know what, pay us if it works, and don't pay if it doesn't work.
That was really fascinating.
It was. And then not him, but others mentioned that, okay, well, in the people that it works, you have to pay, and that's a lot of money in year one. And maybe we can do this the way we buy a house or a car, where we have a mortgage or we have installment payments, and we can spread this out. It's a big purchase, but you get a lifetime of benefit.
Right. And I can't remember if he mentioned it or another panelist mentioned it, but I think it might be worth sharing this perspective. We're sitting here in Boston, and I know in this environment, we always hear about the fact that, U.S. patients subsidize the cost of drugs for the world. So could you perhaps expand a little bit on that idea?
Well, I think on a kind of pure financial analysis, it's true. We have the biggest kind of free market, and that's what spurs innovation. And by the way, that's why many of the big pharmaceutical companies have moved their capitals. It's kind of an earthquake from other centers to be in Boston and other parts of the United States because of the innovation that's here. So I think that the actual origins of these inventions aren't only sort of one company working like a Lone Ranger. They take place in a context.
Yes.
And the secret sauce is the interactions of academia and big pharma and biotech. And I know I'm straying a little off your question here, but I'm really happy we're in Boston because this is one of the capitals of biotech. And it's rising and creating like living cells, maybe an RNA, things we've never had before, bugs potentially as drugs. These are whole new modalities.
That's so fascinating. And then, of course, rounding out the conversation, we had Dr. Pani talking about his perspective from his experience as the head of the Italian regulator. And he's thought hard about this because he's had to think about not just safety and efficacy, but also the reimbursement strategies early on in his time there. He's developed some interesting models that he shared with us. So do you want to briefly just touch on that?
I thought it was very thoughtful and very balanced. And for me, what really struck me about his analysis is at either the time that we approve a drug or we assign a price for reimbursement, we don't know everything about that drug. And so we have to allow for that and he came up with various models for how you could both recognize the uncertainty, get something going to the public, and then adjust the price up or down depending on its value. And one of the reasons this is so important is many places try to do comparative effectiveness, which means you're comparing to another drug, or reference pricing. But these new therapies we've talked about, there's nothing in the field, so you have nothing to compare it to.
Exactly.
And you have to kind of make your best estimate of value. And then the fairest thing to do is to be prepared to adjust over time.
A lot of work needs to continue to happen on all these vectors that we covered. You know, we're here at DIA and we pride ourselves in bringing people across that ecosystem together to have these conversations. And Mike, you've been working in the field as an academic, as an industry leader, and now in the field of helping these emerging biotechs come on the market and develop really new therapies for patients. And you've been a medical doctor treating patients, so you have personal experience across the entire continuum. So what do you think we should take away from this conversation as members of this community? And what would you like to see happen to really advance this conversation to the next step?
I think that, you know, the conversation has so many components. It's so complex. I try to keep my eye on two things. One is research and what can it offer us. And then that research is of no value unless there's access. So we have to figure out those two things. And how to figure them out depends on a kind of open conversation, candid conversation. And you were kind to mention all the things I've done. Well, all those things happen right here at DIA. So I think, you know, for us, fortunately, I think DIA can play a really important role in letting those various sectors have a safe harbor, a neutral place to meet, and where those ideas can converge and come out differently at the end.
That's our goal, and really appreciate you giving your time to the panel, your time to this interview, and to your time to DIA as a member of our board. It's a pleasure working with you, and look forward to continuing these discussions going forward. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Barbara. Likewise.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.